It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska. It is your public radio station on 100.1 FM. 33 degrees in Kodiak, and the Weather Service is calling this a light snow. I would call it at least a medium snow, falling through the foggy mist. They are, in fact, down to 1 mile of visibility at the airport, and they have northwest winds to 14 miles per hour. Look for rain and snow showers for the rest of the day. And a 20% chance of snow showers tonight late. Tomorrow, snow is likely, and they're expecting some serious snow tomorrow, maybe 1 or 2 inches. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough School District fielded a bomb threat yesterday morning. Two companies bid in the state of Alaska's first discounted natural gas lease sale. And reindeer. St. Paul plans to butcher a lot more of them. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Fleets of military ships from the U.S. and its allies are being dispatched to the Red Sea to protect commercial carriers after some came under attack from Houthi rebels out of Yemen. In Bahrain, a member of the coalition, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke further about the mission to protect global shipping.
That foundational global right is under new threat today from the totally unacceptable attacks on merchant vessels by the Houthis in Yemen.
Meanwhile, NPR's David Gura reports companies are taking steps to avoid one of the busiest shipping routes in the world.
Maersk is the latest company to announce it's rerouting ships. Now they'll travel around Africa, which will add about 10 days to each trip. Gregory Brew is an analyst with Eurasia Group.
We're looking at a major disruption of commercial shipping that could result in higher shipping costs for consumers and potentially higher energy costs as well.
In a statement, Maersk says it's pleased the U.S. and other governments are sending more resources to the Red Sea, but the company says rerouting ships will deliver more predictable outcomes for its customers. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
In Washington, National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said China could help halt the attacks on commercial shipping if it wanted by using its influence with Iran, which backs Yemen's Houthi rebels. The Justice Department, meanwhile, says it has charged one Iranian and one Chinese national with crimes related to the acquisition of drone components on behalf of the Iranian government. Officials say the crimes date back to as early as September of 2014. Hundreds of people gathered inside the Washington National Cathedral today for former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's funeral. President Biden delivered a eulogy in which he recounted being there the moment Justice O'Connor made history.
More than 40 years ago, on a Wednesday in September 1981, the Senate Judiciary Committee came to order. I was the ranking member of that committee, and the day's business was momentous. The nomination of Sandra Day O'Connor to become the first woman in American history to serve as a Supreme Court justice on the United States Supreme Court.
Justice O'Connor died December 1st at the age of 93. Civil rights groups are challenging a new Texas law that would allow local law enforcement officers to arrest migrants they believe cross the southern U.S. border illegally. This comes a day after Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed the measure during a ceremony on the U.S. border in Brownsville. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough School District received a bomb threat via email late yesterday morning, Classes are currently on winter break, but the remaining staff were sent home. KMXT's Brian Benoit reports officials believe the threat was a hoax.
Cindy Mika is the school district's superintendent. She says the district worked with local, state, and federal law enforcement to sweep the schools, including the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who deemed the threat as fake. Mika says she still wanted to ensure the safety of her staff.
The FBI has also been involved, and so they don't think it's a credible threat, but, you know, out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to always act that way.
A spokesperson for the FBI's field office in Anchorage said in an email that they take even hoax threats very seriously. She said they will continue to work to, quote, gather, share, and act upon threat information as it comes to their attention. She also urges the public to report any suspicious activity to law enforcement immediately. Mika is currently in Texas for the holiday season and says she just happened to check her email shortly after the threat was sent. She says they only have a few dozen people working during winter break between administrative and maintenance staff.
We immediately evacuated and then went around and put up signs on all the door, notified the borough and the city because we're closing our facilities for the rest of the day.
She says she also worked with village public safety officers around the archipelago to ensure the rural schools were empty as well. Kodiak wasn't the only one to receive a threat, though. Mika says at least 15 other districts across the state received similar threats on Monday as well. KMXT confirmed some of the other districts affected include the Iditarod area, Bering Strait, and the Aleutians East Borough School Districts. Lieutenant Francis De La Fuente is a public information officer with the Kodiak Police Department. He says the threats school districts received were similar to ones made across the state back in September.
Unfortunately, there's people out there that just like stirring up stuff, but we do take these seriously till it's believed to be not credible.
All of the school district's facilities expect to resume regular maintenance and operations on Tuesday. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
Only two companies bid in the state's first royalty-free Cook Inlet natural gas lease sale. The bids total just about $600,000 and cover almost 15,000 acres. The sale, announced in October, was devised as a way to incentivize production in the inlet as the rail belt stares down a natural gas shortage. Rather than paying a set royalty rate, producers only pay the state its share once they've already paid off certain upfront capital and operating costs. The sale also featured a fixed rate of $40 an acre. In the 2022 state lease sale, just one company bid. Sean Clifton with the Department of Natural Resources Oil and Gas Division says the results of this year's sale are promising, but complex to evaluate.
The number of bids and the bidding behavior was not too far outside of normal, and that's fine. I mean, we're happy with it. You know, these are different terms than we'd offered in the past, though, so it's not really an apples-to-apples type of comparison.
Hillcorp Alaska, the primary producer in Cook Inlet, bid on and won three tracts comprising more than 13,000 acres. The company Hex Cook Inlet came away with about 1,700 acres. Hex was formed in 2019 when its owner, John Hendricks, bought out Fury Operating Alaska following its bankruptcy. For years, Hendricks has been in a legal battle with the state and the Kenai Peninsula Borough about the property taxes he pays on a gas-producing unit and platform he acquired from Fury. Clifton says the royalty-free sale represents one of many strategies for increasing Cook Inlet gas production.
This is just one part of a broad approach. So, you know, there's some levers that we can pull. One of them is adjusting the lease terms.
Another approach proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy in October is a reduced royalty rate. Clifton says the state plans to hold more sales like this in the future and says he expects there will be more participation as companies adapt to the new terms. St. Paul plans to revitalize reindeer meat processing in the Pribilofs, opening new streams of revenue and lowering prices in the island's community store along the way. The tribal government, the Aleut community of St. Paul, was recently awarded a federal grant worth $668,000 for the project. Lauren Devine directs the tribe's Wildlife Research and Management Department. She says the grant came after persistent efforts to give the tribe a more active management role over the island's reindeer herd.
We were looking at how could we develop the field protocols to harvest the reindeer and then get that meat to the grocery store to provide a low-cost, locally produced, organic, healthy protein source to tribal members. That also brings the benefits of being able to donate some meat to our local food bank, which is also owned and operated and run by the tribal government.
Devine says reindeer were first brought to St. Paul in the early 1900s, and that subsistence hunting has been consistent since then. With the grant, the tribal government wants to create 2 to 3 new jobs and fill those positions with experts in field butchering and safe processing.
You need to have a team that can communicate, work in the field together, and be able to shoot multiple reindeer in within a short time frame, and then go through the entire butchering process as quickly and efficiently as possible. The field protocol is very particular, and in order to be able to sell the meat or sell any products from the meat. And so everything is very highly regulated.
The reindeer meat will be sold fresh and frozen in the Aleut Community Store with priority given to St. Paul residents. Devine also hopes to explore the potential export opportunities to specialty markets in Anchorage.
Everyone is very excited to see this get off the ground. I am so thankful that it's a multi-year grant and that it gives us the time to really look at 3 years of building and developing the program so that we can have that time to fine-tune everything and be ready to transition into a longer-term implementation plan.
Products are expected on shelves next year. Homelessness experts and political leaders in Anchorage are pushing a new approach to getting people out of shelters and into long-term housing this spring. They want to lease units from whoever has vacancies in Anchorage at market rates. Even with the city's tight housing market, members of the Anchorage Coalition to End Homelessness think it will be cheaper per person to pay rent on apartments while also funding some additional supportive services than to run a big shelter or a sanctioned camping site. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea has this report.
The coalition's executive director, Meg Zalatel, made the pitch at a gathering last week that included service agencies, city officials, and a visiting delegation of their counterparts from Houston, Texas. The Houston officials' efforts dramatically reduced homelessness there and informed Anchorage's new plan. Zalatel is also vice chair of the Anchorage Assembly and says the goal is to house 150 people who are now in the city's emergency winter shelters by the time the shelters close at the end of April.
Not just housing, housing with services, housing that is all in and transparent, housing that supports the person where they are and meets them where they are so that we have the greatest success.
The coalition estimates that for about $85 per person per day, they can fully cover rent and utilities for a year on a one-bedroom apartment, plus case managers making weekly visits and one-time costs like a security deposit, move-in expenses, and a $500 incentive for landlords to hold a unit. By comparison, feeding and sheltering a single adult in the city's three main winter facilities costs more.
We know shelter costs $100 a day, so we have a great opportunity to really not only do the economic thing, but do the human thing.
The coalition is calling the effort the Next Step pilot program and is asking the assembly to pitch in $1.5 million from the city's alcohol tax revenue to supplement funds already secured for the program. The online classified site Craigslist shows hundreds of one-bedroom apartments for rent in Anchorage that fit the coalition's cost estimates. Part of the challenge, though, is finding landlords willing to take on tenants with poor housing and financial histories and other potential red flags. The coalition says financial incentives, like its proposed $500 hold fee in the United Way of Anchorage's Landlord Housing Partnership Program, can help overcome landlords' reluctance. Mayor Dave Bronson and assembly leaders are on board to fund it. But even if the coalition meets its goal, the cold weather shelter system would still have to put more than 400 people back on the streets at the end of April. Felix Rivera, chair of the assembly's Housing and Homelessness Committee, walked through other efforts underway to address the transition out of winter sheltering during a work session on Friday. He said about 40 people could be housed in vacant and abandoned properties that the Assembly is paying to have renovated through the Anchorage Affordable Housing Land Trust. Early discussions are underway to keep the former Solid Waste Services Administration building open as some form of shelter past April, which would accommodate another 150 people. And the Assembly is considering one more concept to offer tiny homes for 30 to 45 people as temporary transitional shelters. The Small Business Restorative and Reentry Services is asking for a $500,000 grant to try that as a pilot program. Rivera said that would leave 194 people who are in emergency cold weather shelter now with nowhere to go at the end of April.
But I think the more that we can take bites out of this apple, the better. And I think this appropriation helps us to do that in a significant way so that come next summer, we don't have the kind of chaos that we've seen the last couple of summers.
As presented Friday, the tiny home concept was not fleshed out enough for other key Assembly members to support it. A resolution to authorize the grants for the coalition's Next Step pilot and the tiny homes are up for public hearing and vote at the Assembly's meeting on Tuesday. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A network of Arctic observers spanning nearly all of Alaska's northern coast from Kotzebue to Kaktovik is helping to center indigenous knowledge in climate change research. The Alaska Arctic Observatory and Knowledge Hub, or AOK for short, is comprised of local Inupiaq observers who work with the University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers to document how the Arctic is changing. Donna Hauser is the network's lead scientist.
Observers have seen some really, you know, big environmental changes. But they're also documenting what does that mean for the community and from their perspective in terms of the traditional activities.
That can be everything from climate change's impacts on berry picking to hunting seals. On a daily or weekly basis, observers send the AOK team notes on sea ice and wind conditions, air and water temperatures, animals and community activities that researchers then compile into a database. Since 2006, the network has collected 10,000 observations. AOK observers also co-authored a paper on their contributions to Arctic climate science that was included in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Arctic Report Card released last week. Roberta Glenn-Barade is Inupiaq from Uktiavik and serves as AOK's project coordinator. She says the network has helped center the needs and perspectives of communities on the front lines of climate change.
Rather than having these narratives framed by outside researchers who have kind of an understanding about Alaska or Indigenous people, but they don't quite hit the mark. And so what we do at AOK is allow the observers, their observations and knowledge and expertise to tell the story.
By collecting year-round data on the ground, Glenn-Barade says AOK has been able to track the impacts of climate change that current climate research isn't focusing on. One example is how changing winds are making travel more difficult.
If it's so windy and it's blowing all the snow off the tundra, then you're not able to ride your snow machine out to go hunting. Or it's affecting the sea ice and travel on the sea ice and understanding that that travel is really heavily impacted by the year-to-year conditions. And it's not really a story that's told.
Glenn-Barade says she'd like to see more funding dedicated to promoting indigenous knowledge within Western science. AOK is currently looking at ways to expand and make its data more accessible to Arctic communities. The sounds that came from the Anchorage Performing Arts Center this weekend were bright and brassy, yet very, very low. The concert was in the lobby, packed with people all the way up to the staircases and onto the mezzanine, and KNBA's Rhonda McBride had a front row seat.
There is something about a room full of tubas that just puts a smile on your face. In case you're counting, 52 tubas turned out for Tuba Christmas 2023, an annual event in Anchorage for almost three decades. For most most of those years, Neil Haglund has been the conductor. This year, the tuba orchestra was made up of tubas of many shapes and sizes that included sousaphones, baritones, and double-bell euphoniums. But the differences don't stop there.
There's all sorts of different keys. The basic one is a B-flat tuba. Then they have a double B-flat tuba. They have C tubas. They have E-flat tubas. So it just depends on what they want to bring that day.
So why is it that Stan Summers has never missed a tuba Christmas since they first began in Anchorage in 1996?
Probably the oddity of it. You think of seeing orchestras and that together. You don't think of, oh, tubas getting together and playing. They were always the oompa, 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 pa.
Tubas sit in the back of the band playing bass lines. But Andy Sorensen was front and center with his sousaphone fully dressed for the occasion, outfitted with a Santa hat, beard, and a bright red nose to show that he has what it takes.
Hot air.
Sorensen has been a fixture at Tuba Christmas for 15 years and says the best part is to sit down with all the other tuba players.
There's that big fat sound of all these other people around you all with a big deep bass sound.
Just ask Elias Papakostas.
My favorite sound.
A sound for both little kids and big kids. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Next year's forecasts call for lower interest rates, higher stock prices. I'm Novosoffo with the Marketplace Minute. Goldman Sachs is predicting that the S&P 500 will grow about 7.5% next year, powered increasingly by smaller companies as the economy maintains momentum. Meanwhile, Bank of America is joining Goldman in predicting interest rate cuts, starting in March. Home builders are more optimistic. Single-family housing starts increased 18% last month as mortgage interest rates receded. Starts for apartment buildings rose as well. The New York Federal Reserve says the average starting wage last month was about $79,000, the most since the survey began in 2014. Compared to the summer, more people are also looking for a new job. I'm Novosoffo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of December, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:51. It will set again promptly at 4:22 this afternoon, giving us 6 hours and 31 minutes of daylight. A loss of a mere 25 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was set in 1985, then in 2011, and then again in 2014. And our record low was 5 degrees set in 1919. Currently it is 33 degrees in Kodiak. A light snow is reportedly falling through a foggy mist. I believe we're getting to medium well snow at this point. Northwest winds at 14 miles per hour at the airport, and they are down to one single mile of visibility. For this afternoon, look for rain and snow showers, mainly before 1, so in the next half hour or so. High near 37 today with southeast winds to 20, turning to the west. Maybe an inch or so is expected to fall. That may have already fallen. 20% chance of snow showers after 4 a.m. tonight, too, with mostly cloudy skies, low of 27, west winds to 15. and they are predicting the real snow will start after 7 a.m. After 10 a.m. tomorrow. Mostly cloudy skies, high near 35, southwest winds to 10, turning to the north to 15 tomorrow afternoon, and they are still predicting 1 to 2 inches of snow tomorrow. However, mostly sunny skies are expected on Thursday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up. That will happen at 12:59 this afternoon here on the west side, call it 1 o'clock, and be 2.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 6:50 p.m. of 7.1 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:45 this afternoon and be 4.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:27 p.m. of 11.3 feet. Mariners, be aware, you do have a small craft advisory for through Wednesday for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, south winds to 30 knots, becoming west 25 late today, seas to 10 feet. For tonight, west 20, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, on our east side, northeast 20, becoming northwest in the afternoon, and 7-foot seas, building to 8 feet Wednesday night when they are expected to see northwest winds at 30 knots. And if we're going to be offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, 15 to 85 nautical miles, we have a gale warning today with south winds to 35 knots, seas all the way up to 12 feet farther than 15 nautical miles offshore in the Gulf, and southwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 13 feet tonight. For tomorrow, offshore, look for southeast 25 becoming northwest 30, except north of Dangerous Cape, southeast 20 becoming northeast 20, seas to 12 feet, and northwest winds to 30 knots for Wednesday night, seas to 12 feet offshore in the Gulf. In the Shilikoff Strait, small craft advisory for today with east winds to 25 becoming southwest 30 this afternoon, 4-foot seas building to 8 feet this afternoon. And for tomorrow, southwest 15 and 4-foot seas. Wednesday, north 20 and seas to 5 feet. And Wednesday night, northwest 20 and 5-foot seas in the Shilikoff. Well, it is tonight, and you are all invited to the KMXT Holiday Party. That begins at 6:30 p.m. right here in the studios and offices of KMXT, right next to the library. Celebrate the season with us and enjoy some refreshments and a white elephant gift exchange. It's always a lot of fun. It's all happening here at 620 Egan Way, 6:30 p.m. tonight. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Tuesday, December 19th at 6 o'clock, Fire Protection Area Number 1 Board is having a work session at the Bayside Fire Hall. On Wednesday, December 20th at 5:15, the Solid Waste Advisory Board is having a regular meeting at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center Conference Room. Also Wednesday on December 20th at 6:30, the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And on Thursday, December 21st, the Borough Assembly is having a regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. This afternoon at the library, they're having a special Holiday Week Double Crafternoon. At 3:30 p.m., patrons will be making Star Wars-themed paper snowflakes, and tomorrow at 3:30 p.m., patrons will be making Mario-themed ornaments. Geared for youth ages K through 12, supplies are provided. Again, that is today at 3:30 p.m., Star Wars-themed paper snowflakes, and on Friday at 3:30 p.m., Mario-themed ornaments. Happening at the library. Tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. is the library's famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time. That's for kids ages 3 to 6. And on Thursday at 3 p.m., it's the next chess club gathering. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.